That's when he took our families hostage. Queen Raysa is not just asking for a truce, Father, Hal said. She wants an alliance against an enemy who threatens us both.
Who, Jared? His father snorted. Isn't it enough that we're no longer supporting the war? She cannot expect us to turn traitor against our homeland.
His eyes narrowed.
Why are we even talking about this? Are you here as her emissary or what?
I'm not her emissary, and I'm not talking about Jared. I'm talking about the Empress in the East, Celestine. His father frowned.
Celestine? Isn't she the Carthian pirate that promised Gerard an army of mages? I was never sure she really existed, except in the king's imagination. I haven't heard another word about her since he died.
She's real, Hal said. She's taken Chalk Cliffs. It looks like she's here to stay. His father stared at him.
Where did you hear that? It's news to me.
I was there, Hal said. Being held prisoner in the keep there, I saw it happen.
Did she bring an army of mages as promised?
If her soldiers are mages, they're not the kind we're used to.
What do you mean?
Robert stuffed an end of bread in his mouth and chased it with a swallow of ale.
What are they like?
They're nearly impossible to kill. They don't have amulets, and I don't think they use magic in the way our mages do.
Really? His father said. Do you know that from personal experience? Were you in on the fighting?
Yes, Hal said, then thought a moment. Well, actually, no. One of them, dropped out of the sky when I was up on the battlements.
Dropped out of the sky?
Madelon reared back in his chair, as if Hal might have something catching.
They can fly?
Hal realized how implausible that sounded. Well, no, I don't think so. There was a beast or a bird that dropped him.
A beast or bird dropped a soldier on you.
From the skepticism in his father's face, Hal knew he was losing ground. There wasn't even a question there. Robert was instantly on board, of course.
What did it look like? Did it have scales or feathers? Was it a griffin or a dragon or... Robert!
Their father shook his head, as if saying, don't encourage him.
So you didn't actually see the battle, he said to Hal.
Hal shook his head.
I was locked in the keep during the fighting, but I could hear it well enough. How did you escape?
We left through the water gate during the battle.
We?
His father raised an eyebrow.
Me and another prisoner, Hal said.
He saw no reason to get into the details, and thereby raise more questions than he already had. Madelon sighed heavily. He drummed his fingers on the table, looking at him from under his bushy brows.
I'm sorry, son. It sounds to me like the Witch Queen fed you a story and let you go.
She didn't let me go, Hal said. Or had she? I'm no good at this, he thought. Words are not my weapons of choice. Nobody in her right mind would choose me as an emissary.
If this was staged for my benefit, the Queen went to a lot of trouble, Hal said. After the battle, the entire harbor was crowded with ships flying the Empress's siren banner. They were offloading soldiers and weapons and supplies. A huge army. I saw that with my own eyes.
Could it have been Condrey of some kind?
It was not Condrey. I spoke afterwards to some who were in the battle and interrogated one of the Carthian fighters.
How did you come to interrogate?
I took a mount from the Carthian horse line, Hal said. I questioned one of their sentries before I killed him.
So they are killable?
Hal nodded. They are, but it's not easy. I ran one of them through, and he kept right on fighting.
The only thing that brought him down was cutting off his head. His father studied him.
You're a good soldier, son, and a savvy officer, possibly the best in the Empire. But you are no politician. Apparently, I did not pass on the gene for connivory and subterfuge. Always look for the simplest explanation. If what you're saying is true, that the Fells is under attack by a Carthian army, why would Hal lie about that?
Robert put in, then subsided under his father's withering gaze.
The most likely explanation is that either Gerard or Jarrett struck a deal with this Celestine,
Matalon went on.
While she sends her armies into the north, it frees Jarrett to come after us. Even if there is no collusion between them, he will move against us when word reaches him that the Wolf Queen is otherwise occupied. So, it behooves us to march on the capital sooner rather than later.
That's just what we shouldn't do, Hal said. While we're fighting among ourselves, Celestine will be winning territory in the north. Sooner or later, she will turn south.
And by the time she does, we'll have united the Empire and can contend with her.
He sighed and rubbed the back of his neck, looked at Hal, then away.
Has it occurred to you that the witch in the north has...
He paused, as if reluctant to speak the words.
Has bewitched you?
No, Hal said, his cheeks heaving with embarrassment.
I am not bewitched. I know what I saw. Look, I don't know what was done to you while you were held captive in the north,
his father said.
I have no knowledge or understanding of sorcery. I leave those matters to the church.
He brightened.
It might do you good to speak with the chaplain. Father Menard is with us, and he might have some insights as to...
No, Hal said. I don't want to talk to Menard. I don't need an exorcism. I need an army. He tried to quash the doubt that welled up from deep inside him. Could it have been an elaborate ruse, put on for his benefit? Had he been played? If it had been a ruse, it was a drama worthy of any stage in Tamron, complete with a cast of thousands.
I can't give you an army, Hal, his father said. I will need every sword I have.
Are you really going to march on the capital when the king is holding your wife and daughter hostage? Without meaning to, Hal had raised his voice.
Is that what this is about?
Matalon drained his cup and slammed it down.
You know I do not negotiate with hostage-takers. We did send a message to Arden's court after Gerard died, demanding that Jarrett release the hostages straight away as a gesture of good faith. He countered with a demand that we surrender to the king's justice.
If he offered justice, that would be a first in that family, Hal thought.
Has there been any word about the whereabouts of those he's holding? They are somewhere in the capital, I presume,
his father said sourly.
The king would want to keep them close. He assumes that we won't attack as long as he holds that card, and that means he has no incentive to make concessions.
Matalon gave Hal a long, measured look.
Frankly, we are not interested in a peace that maintains the status quo. Why should we reward the son for his father's bad behavior? There is not a thane in the Empire who hasn't suffered massive losses of land, men, and money under Gerard. If we submit to Jarrett, he comes away with everything Gerard has stolen from us, and we'll go to the block. The thanes don't agree on much, but we are in agreement on this point. We must negotiate from strength, not as supplicants. So, as things stand, there is no avoiding a fight. If we are going to make our move, this is the time to do it, when he is at his weakest. Why wait until he's found his footing? As for our families, any harm that comes to them will be repaid in kind.
But
That won't bring Harper or Mother back, Robert said. Their father squeezed Robert's shoulder.
We are men, Robert, he said. Sometimes men have to make hard decisions.
Robert twisted away from Matalon's hand. If the hostages were freed, wouldn't King Jarrett be more likely to negotiate?
No doubt, their father said with a hoarse laugh. Jarrett has an army, but armies need feeding whether they are fighting or not. He has no money and no territory north of the capital. If the savages in Bruinswallow and Wienhaven sense weakness on his part, they'll be pressing in at the borders. Right now, I'd rather be us than him.
Well, I don't want to be us, Robert shouted. I don't want to be us at all. If the king won't let our families go, we need to free them ourselves. And he stomped up the stairs, leaving Hal and his father staring at each other across the table.
It's hard to be young, Matalon said, shaking his head.
It's hard, period, Hal said, pushing his last bite of meat around on his plate. He considered asking for permission to go to the capital to see if he could find out where the hostages were being kept. He still had friends in the Ardenine army that he would trust with his life, but he suspected that Matalon would be reluctant to approve any enterprise that might result in putting one more hostage in Jarrett's keep. If he asked permission and his father said no, then he definitely couldn't go. Better to ask forgiveness than to ask permission, Hal thought. Matalon cocked his head.
Robert has always been headstrong, but you've always been the steady one, he said. Enchanted or not, your time in the north has changed you.
Hal nodded. That, at least, was something they could agree on.
I know that you're disappointed that we can't open another front right now, but we have to choose our battles. As you've seen, it's hard enough to persuade the Thanes to finish the war we're in. I'll tell you right now, there will be no support for coming to the aid of the Witch Queen.
Hal pushed his plate away and drained his cup, knowing there was no point in continuing to argue.
I understand, sir.
In the past, that would have ended it, but his father continued to study Hal, as if seeing something he hadn't seen before.
I have agents in the north. I promise I'll get in touch with them and see what we can find out. In the meantime, we need to take advantage of this opportunity to end the civil war. That will make us strong enough to resist outside forces.
Lord Matalon paused, and when Hal said nothing, continued.
We've been able to persuade a number of soldiers from the regular army to come over to our side. Once word gets out that you're with us, more will come. I would like to consolidate all of our soldiers under your command. I'll make that case when we meet with the others tomorrow.
Hal nodded. What about mages? Have any of them come over? Matalon rubbed his chin.
Not many, and most of those are collared, so it's hard to predict what they might do in a battle situation. It's hard to argue with a collar.
How are we doing for ordnance?
I've been building a stockpile, but our allies have not been particularly forthcoming.
Matalon grimaced.
Each man wants to hold on to what's his. It's not just the war with Jarrett that they're concerned about. It's after. But there's someone I want you to meet. She's been sourcing weapons for the crown for a year or two, and she thinks she can help us with magical ordnance.
She's been working for the crown? Hal raised an eyebrow. Do you trust her? His father laughed hoarsely.
She's a practical sort, he said. Our money spends as well as any, and right now we're the ones who are buying.
He looked toward the door.
There she is now.
The girl who'd just entered shook rainwater from her dark curls and looked around the room.
When she spotted them at their corner table, she shed her cloak and draped it over her arm, signaled to the barkeep, then crossed the room to them. "Lord Madelon," she said, "good to see you."
"Barrow Hill," Hal's father said. "We were just talking about you. Please join us."
Years of his mother's training kicked in. Hal stood, bowed, and pulled out a chair for her. Barrow Hill slowly turned her head and looked him up and down, as if he were a creature she'd not seen before, then plucked at her skirts as if they were the fanciest of ball gowns and lowered herself into the chair, ruining the effect by squirming a bit to get settled. The server plunked a pint of bingo down in front of her. A pint, Hal thought. That would put any teamster on his back in short order. She raised her glass in a toast. "I see that the rumors are true, Captain. Welcome back from the dead. Tell me, what's it like on the other side?" Hours later, when Hal went upstairs, he knocked at Robert's door, hoping to settle him a little. There was no answer. He knocked again. His brother was usually a light sleeper. Finally, he pushed the door open. The bed was empty. Robert was gone. Chapter 25. Point and Counterpoint. Corporal Talbot's timely arrival was both a blessing and a curse, as far as Evan was concerned. The news about the attack on Chalk Cliffs supported parts of the story that Evan was telling, but it also meant that his warning had come too late. The fact that Celestine already had a foothold in the east made him feel crowded. It made him want to keep traveling west until he reached the edge of the world, and maybe jump off. It also meant that his movements were limited now. It didn't help that he and his crew were locked up together in a suite of rooms. It was like being penned in with a pack of nervous cats. Not even the ritual of Tay would settle their nerves. He wondered if Destin knew about the attack on Chalk Cliffs. If he didn't, he would hear about it before long. Would that make Evan's job easier or harder? Evan was almost grateful when the Wetlanders called him into the Queen's small hall for questioning. His crew, not so much.
"What if you never come back?"
Brody said, shifting from foot to foot in his agitation.
"What will become of us?"
"We should fight our way out,"
Jorani said, producing a dagger from some hidden place. Evan half expected her to come up with a bow and a quiver of arrows and a trebuchet as well.
"If we try to fight our way out, I will be killed, and you won't," Evan said.
He brushed at his fine breeches, which by now were looking less fine.
"How is that helpful?"
She seemed stumped by that question. After a moment's pause, she stowed the blade away. The Bloodsworn turned Stormborn were the fiercest, most loyal crew he'd ever known. But they were like children in some ways. They could be led, but they weren't skilled at making decisions on their own. Celestine probably likes it that way, he thought, but I don't. I could use a little help. When Evan arrived at the small hall, his interrogators were waiting for him. All the faces were at least marginally familiar. The Wolf Queen, Captain Byrne, the Queen's niece, Lady Barrett, the Queen's sister, the Princess Melanie, Lord Bayard, the High Wizard, Hadley de Villieux, the Upland Mage Shadow Dancer, Corporal Talbot, who'd brought the news of the fall of Chalk Cliffs, and, of course, the healer, Prince Adrian Sulhan, who sat in the corner nearest the hearth, his face in and out of shadow. In Arden's court, Sulhan had always worn drab healer's colors, so it was a bit of a shock to see him dressed in velvets and satin. The prince had his mother's eyes, with a bit more blue in them, and a hint of her coppery complexion below his coppery hair. Evan was beginning to realize that there was no way to win over the queen if he didn't win over the healer. Sulhan was the son of the queen, after all, and blood trumps everything else. Even if she believed what Evan had to say, when it came to a choice, she would choose her own blood. That was the way the world worked. But winning over the healer was going to be like climbing a mountain from deep underground. It would help considerably if Evan could convince him that Jenna was still alive. Talbot opened the session with a brisk overview of what had happened in Chalk Cliffs. It was all too familiar.
"This is what the Empress does," Evan said. "For the past 5 years, she has been systematically winning the free cities of the desert coast. First, infiltration by her bloodsworn. Then, the taking of the port, the offloading of her armies, and an invasion that extends her control as far as the Dragonbacks. Here, let me show you."
He'd brought his maps along, and he laid them out on the table and traced the backbone of Karthus from north to south.
"Where is her stronghold?"
Captain Byrne leaned over the map.
"Here."
Evan unfurled another map, an older one of the northern islands, at the time that they were conquered by the Nazari family.
"I found this in your temple library," he said. "I assume this was brought here by some of those who fled Nazari rule eons ago. It's out of date, but the geography should be the same."
He turned the map so that Byrne could get a better look.
"For years, the northern islands have been battered by storms that made it difficult even to approach the shoreline," he said. "In recent years, the weather has seemingly improved. Celestine has been rebuilding the ancient Nazari capital of Celestgard on one of the Weeping Sisters. I'm not sure which one."
"The Weeping Sisters?" The queen cocked her head. "I'm not familiar with those."
"They are 3 islands in the northern islands that are known for volcanic activity, like many of the mountains in the fells. I've not been there, but I would expect that the defenses would be formidable."
The healer watched silently throughout the geography lesson, taking notes, the scratch of his quill audible now and then when the conversation died.
"The Empress's ships carried off dozens of prisoners," Barrett said, "including one of our best officers. Based on past practice, where would she take them and what does she intend to do with them?"
Evan looked from face to face, seeking clues. The atmosphere in the room was fraught, full of tension, unstable, seething with secrets. It reminded Evan of when a storm was about to break. The clouds piling up, the air so thick with electricity that it was difficult to breathe.
"Would this officer be Captain Gray?" he said.
The whole room flinched, all except the healer, who went very, very still.
"What do you know about Captain Gray?" Barrett said.
"Just a guess," Evan said disarmingly. "At the reception, Queen Nereza mentioned that a Captain Gray was at Chalk Cliffs and expressed concerns about his safety. And now, it seems, all your worst fears have come true."
From the looks on their faces, he'd struck a vein.
"Who is this Captain Gray? And why is he so important?" "So," Byrne said, breaking the silence, "going back to Lady Barrett's earlier question, she might very well take prisoners to Celestgard," Evan said. "On the other hand, she controls most of the desert coast now, so it's difficult to say. It would depend on how she intends to use them. Most of her prisoners go directly into her blood-sworn army."
"What does that mean, blood-sworn?"
Talbot wore an expression of sick dread.
"They are bound to the Empress in a blood ritual," Evan said.
This was met with a collective shudder. Sulhan ran a finger over his forearm, as if tracing a memory. He exchanged glances with the queen.
"Have you heard of an order of bloodthirsty priests called the Darian Brothers?"
Queen Raisa asked abruptly.
"Is there a connection?"
"Not to my knowledge, no," Evan said. "I've not heard of them."
That, at least, seemed to be the right answer.
"Your crewman, Brody, says that he was bloodsworn and you freed him,"
Bayar said, speaking up for the first time.
"Does that mean there is a way to undo the blood magic charm once it's cast?"
Evan struggled to come up with an answer.
"I don't know that you can undo it. Celestine doesn't let go of anything easily. But it seems that you can replace it with something else. That's what I did with the Stormborn. That is why their auras are red instead of purple."
"So you are a blood mage also,"
Bayar said, tapping his fingers on the arm of his chair.
"Apparently, yes."
They all looked at one another. After a moment, Barrett cleared her throat and made a show of consulting her notes.
"Why is the Empress interested in the Mage Mart, as you call them?"
The questioning continued, covering much of the same ground as in his earlier meeting with them. Didn't anyone take notes? He supposed that now they had more reason to be interested in what he had to say. Or maybe this repeat was for Talbot's and the healer's benefit. Talbot asked a few questions, but the healer remained silent. Evan kept looking at him, waiting for him to weigh in, make a face, dispute something he said, or provide additional information. But he didn't. That's when Evan realized the queen must have told Sulhan to keep quiet. Was it because she was angry with her son? Or was the intent to, what was the expression, give Evan enough rope to hang himself?
"How is it that you are the only holdout along the desert coast?"
Evan wrenched himself back to the interrogation, realizing that Barrett had just asked him a question.
"I have built a fortified stronghold," Evan said. "And I am one of only a few gifted ship's masters that are left. That gives me an advantage. But I am under no illusion that we can hold out forever. I have to go to sea in order to make a living."
"By attacking our ships and stealing our goods," the queen said.
"It's nothing personal," Evan said. "We steal from everyone, northerner and southerner, desert coast and wetland coast. We are equal opportunity brigands in that regard."
This was met with stony silence, finally broken by the queen.
"For the next series of questions, I've asked Lord Bayard to take over the questioning and use persuasion. Are you familiar with that?"
Evan sat up straighter. Persuasion? Was that the wetland word for torture?
"I am not," he admitted, his mouth dry. "Could you perhaps explain?" "I'll use magic to ensure that your answers are true," Bayar said. "Don't worry," he added. "It's not painful, but I would ask you not to do anything to interfere with it." "I wouldn't know how,"
Evan said, busily sorting through the secrets he wanted to keep. He should be all right, assuming a partial truth would be enough. He and the High Wizard sat on either side of a small table, and Bayar gripped his hands. Magic flowed from the wizard's hands to his own. Evan had expected that it might be similar to the sensation of rum or blue ruin running down his throat, or that it might be painful, despite the High Wizard's assurances. But no. It was more like a cold river running through Evan's veins,
that eventually disappeared as it mingled with his blood, leaving no trace behind. Bayar frowned, looking down at their joined hands, then said,
"Prince Adrian has told us that he met you in Arden's court this winter. Why did you go there?"
Evan glanced at the healer, who sat in shadow, fingers laced, his chin resting on his hands. He offered no clues.
"I went there to prevent the Empress Celestine from making a deal with the King of Arden." "How did you know that such a deal was on the table?"
Evan hesitated.
"I had a source in Arden's court who sent word to me."
"So this plan was common knowledge in the Ardenine capital?"
Barrett raised an eyebrow.
"None of my eyes and ears reported that."
"It was not well known," Evan said. "My source is close to the king, and was involved in the negotiations."
He was watching the healer when he said that. Sulhan straightened, as if he'd finally heard something he didn't already know. He waited for Bayar to ask who his source was, and the High Wizard didn't disappoint.
"Who was this source who was close to the king?"
Evan had no intention of giving Destin away.
"I would rather not say. It would put this person in grave danger." "Don't worry," Bayar said. "What is said here stays here. You can speak freely."
Evan could continue to object, but that would be the same as saying, "I don't trust you." And that wouldn't advance his diplomatic agenda. So he found himself lying, and then waiting to be struck dead, or at least called on it.
"It was Queen Marina," he said. "We met once, when I boarded her ship in the southern islands. I must have made a good impression."
They all looked at each other, faces full of doubt.
"Well," the queen said, glancing at the healer, "I suppose it's possible. She is a Tomlin, after all."
Bayar still looked puzzled. With a faint shake of his head, he tightened his grip so that the pressure was almost painful.
"Why didn't you want this deal to go forward?"
"I did not want the Empress's influence to spread farther than it already has," Evan said.
"Trust me, you don't want Celestine for a neighbor."
Bayar abruptly let go of Evan's hands.
"Something's wrong," he said flatly.
Barrett leaned forward.
"With? Do you mean that he's not telling the truth?"
"I have no idea if he's telling the truth," Bayar said. "I don't think it's working."
He turned back to Evan.
"Are you blocking me?" "Because if you are, I'm not blocking you," Evan said. "How could I? You took my amulet. Besides, as I already said, I wouldn't know how."
"It's in your best interest to cooperate," the queen said to Evan.
"I am not trying to interfere with the High Wizard's magic. The truth serves me as well as you."
The High Wizard rubbed the back of his neck, his expression making it clear that he didn't believe him.
"Doesn't persuasion work on you?" Queen Raisa said.
Evan shrugged.
"I don't know. I've never submitted to this kind of magic before."
Sulhan was staring at Evan now, eyes narrowed, as if he'd had some kind of epiphany. He leaned over and whispered something to Shadow Dancer, who nodded.
"Well," the queen said briskly, "we've been at this a good while already. Perhaps we should..."
"Let me try," Prince Adrian said.
Suddenly, the healer was the center of attention. Queen Raisa shook her head.
"I was about to say that perhaps we should recess for now and review what..."
"I promise I won't hurt him, Mother,"
the healer said, those remarkable blue-green eyes fixed on Evan.
"But I believe I can get at the truth."
Lord Bayard is as capable as any wizard in the realm when it comes to interrogation, the queen said, her voice low and furious. Now the healer looked at Evan.
Do you object?
He said. Sweat trickled between Evan's shoulder blades, but he shrugged and said,
Why not?
The prince swapped places with the high wizard. Sulhan sat across the table from Evan, shook back the sleeves of his jacket, reached across, and gripped his hands. The prince's hands were strong, calloused, buzzing with energy. There came that same cold current as before, though perhaps a bit more intuitive. Then the prince said,
What's that on the back of your neck?
Evan's heart plummeted to his toes, and his palms grew slippery with sweat. They stared into each other's eyes for what felt like a lifetime. Outed, Evan thought. But how? He'd made sure to keep his neck under cover. He said nothing aloud.
Lord Bayard,
Prince Adrian said, his grip tightening on Evan's hands, pinning them in place.
Could you examine the back of Strangwort's neck and tell us what you see?
Evan heard the wizard's robes rustle as he crossed to where he could stand behind him. He could feel Bayard's fingers brushing his skin, raising goose flesh as the wizard swept his hair aside. It reminded him of that day in Montaigne's palace at Arden's court, when he'd done the same to Jenna Bandelow in front of an audience of gawkers. What goes around comes around, he thought. What you cast into the waves often washes up on your own private beach. He heard Bayard's dry, amused voice.
It would appear to be a metal and stone badge, like an embedded amulet, he said, his breath warming the back of Evan's neck. I assume that it is what we have been calling a mage mark.
Evan heard chairs scraping, the sound of feet padding across the floor as they all had their look. He kept his eyes on the healer, who wore a trace of a smile.
I think now would be a good time to have a recess, the healer said.
Chapter 26 A Common Cause. When Evan returned to the suite of rooms he shared with his crew, they were boiling with curiosity about the interrogation. Evan kept them in suspense while he retrieved his burner and kettle from the corner, put water on to heat, and set out the tiny cups for the Tay ceremony. He knew they would need fortification against this news. Those reborn in blood never lost their desire for it. When the water was steaming, they watched in avid silence as Evan added the smoky leaves to the brew. While they steeped, he stripped back his sleeve, found a spot on his scarred forearm, and sliced it open, dripping his blood into the common pot. Evan served each crew member himself. It was the least he could do for people cursed with a thirst that would never be quenched. When all had been served, Evan slumped into a chair, stirred the fire with a stick, and said,
They know.
They all looked at one another, as if each hoped that somebody else would ask a question.
They know. What?
Brody said finally.
They know about the mage mark,
Evan said. This was met with a collective groan. Secrets like that didn't keep. There was no stronghold, no prison strong enough to keep them safe, once Celestine knew where he was. It was all Evan could do to stay in his seat and not stand and begin pacing, which would not help the mood in the room.
What are we going to do?
Tessa said.
I'm not sure it much matters what we do, Evan said.
Do you think they will sell you to the Empress? Brody said. Or trade you to get their port back?
That was Brody, always the cheerful one.
I don't really have control of this story going forward,
Evan said. A lot depends on the healer.
The healer? Jorani scowled. He hates you, doesn't he?
Maybe, Evan said. I think I'm beginning to win him over, though. If I can stay alive another year or two, we might be friends.
Let's go find the healer and make him be your friend, Jorani said.
Right, Evan thought. That could go wrong in, oh, so many ways. This pessimistic thought was interrupted by voices outside the door, as if the guards outside were arguing with someone. Finally, the door banged open, revealing the surly healer prince, Adrian Sulhan. The blue jackets guarding the door admitted him, then pulled the door shut behind him. Instantly, Tezza, Jorani, Brody, and the others fanned out, forming a wall in front of Evan. Evan pushed his way to the front of his crew, waving them off.
"Don't worry," he said. "I'm sure this is a friendly visit."
Turning to the healer, he said, "Good evening.
To what do I owe this unexpected—"
"We need to talk," Sulhan said, displaying his usual charm.
"I agree," Evan said. "But what's it been, 2 hours since we last spoke? Do you have those notes with you? It might save some time." "I'd rather start fresh and speak frankly. There's too much at stake to waste time sparring with you."
The healer was as serious as death. Evan folded his arms and broadened his stance.
"Will you speak frankly as well?"
"Of course," the healer said, as if that point was never in question. He ran his eyes over the hovering Stormborn.
"I'd prefer to meet privately."
This brought protests from Evan's crew.
"The healer doesn't mean me any harm," Evan said. "Else he wouldn't have come alone."
This spawned another chorus of objections. Evan lifted the pot from the burner and handed it off to Tezza.
"Go, and take this with you."
They were still grumbling when they went out the door, with the Tay.
"Your crew seems unusually loyal," the Wolf Prince said, staring after them in a way that suggested that he really meant fanatical, obsessive, or paranoid. "The Empress has put a sizable price on my head, and there are always those who would like to cash in. The only way I've been able to keep a crew that won't betray me is through a blood bond. There's a price to be paid for that."
Evan gathered pillows from the furniture and tossed them down onto the rug.
"Let's sit, shall we, and have a civilized conversation. I've not much to offer in the way of refreshments, but I could brew up a fresh pot of tea. It's a beverage popular in Karthus for bringing people—"
"No," the healer said, then added, "Thank you." Evan shrugged and sat down on one of the pillows. After a moment's hesitation, the healer sat, his hands resting on his knees, the lamps behind him sending his long shadow across the floor.
"Now then," Evan said, figuring that he would get a question in first if he could. "I'm curious. What tipped you off to the Mage Mark?"
"Your resistance to direct magic," Sulhan said.
"I had the same kind of sensation when I questioned Jenna."
He paused.
"So, what can you tell me about mage marks?"
"Disappointingly little, I'm afraid," Evan said. "For 5 years now, I've been looking for someone who can explain it to me. Someone besides the Empress, I mean, who no doubt would be happy to fill me in."
"So, is she hunting you too? Or are you working for her?"
Sulhan rolled his eyes. "I'm so confused." Evan laughed, a little amazed to find out that the healer had a sense of humor.
"One thing I've learned in the past 5 years is to trust no one with the truth. Lying about nearly everything has become a habit. It's how I stay alive."
"If you plan to keep lying,
Tell me now, and that will save us both some time, the healer said, all traces of humor gone.
I have no plans to lie to you, Evan said, which was true enough. Then again, plans change.
So, about mage marks, the healer said.
I've been marked for as long as I can remember, Evan said. My first memories date from when I was 4 or 5, running the streets of Endru in Karthus, doing whatever I needed to do to stay alive.
Evan relayed the rest of the story, how he'd been plucked from the streets by Latham Strangward and added to his crew.
Captain Strangward told me to keep the mage mark hidden, that it would rile up the crew. It wasn't until I met Celestine Nazari for the first time that I found out she was hunting the mage mark.
So,
when the Empress learned that I was aboard Strangward's ship, she demanded that he give me up. Strangward refused. In fact, he threatened to kill me rather than turn me over to her.
Evan paused, the old pain, the questions elbowing forward.
I'm still not sure who he was protecting, me or everyone else. Whatever his motive, it didn't work out well for him. He lost his ship, his crew, and his life. I escaped.
The prince, head cocked, was studying him. He didn't seem to be coiled quite as tightly as he had been.
We may have more in common than I thought, he said.
Evan nodded, thinking it was ironic that he was having this heart-to-heart with Sulhan, of all people.
So, the healer said, with an air of getting down to the real business of the evening, you say the Empress is your enemy. Why, then, did you go to Arden's court pretending to be representing her? As I told the council, I went to try to prevent the King of Arden from making an alliance with Celestine, and so acquiring a person with a mage mark. That person turned out to be Jenna Bandalo.
Did you know Jenna before then?
Evan shook his head.
I had not known there was another one of us hiding in the wetlands until I got the message that a deal was in the offing. I couldn't offer an army, but there is a huge population of dragons in the mountains at home. I hoped that if I could persuade King Gerard to trade Jenna for the dragon, I could kill the deal. King Gerard wouldn't have an army, and Celestine wouldn't have Jenna. Plus, the dragon might burn the capital to the ground.
So, Montaigne's refusal to make a trade for the dragon ruined that plan, the healer said.
Evan nodded, wishing he could leave it at that. But if Jenna told the healer about his visit to the tower room, the truce between them would be over.
Then I made a mistake, Evan said, looking down at his hands.
What do you mean?
After King Gerard declined my proposal, I went to Jenna's room to find out what she knew. I hoped she would be able to tell me something that would reassure me.
Reassure you?
Something that would convince me that even if Montaigne sent her to the Empress, it would not end in disaster.
Was Jenna able to reassure you?
Evan shook his head.
No. It turned out that she knows less than I do. So, Tezza and I were talking about what to do when she took matters into her own hands. She smashed one of the lamps on the floor and set the room on fire. Why would she do that? Isn't it obvious? She was trying to escape.
By setting fire to herself? The healer snorted. That makes sense. Did she blow a hole in the tower, too?
That happened after I left, Evan said. I have a theory, though.
Sulhan tilted his head back, his hands resting on his thighs.
I can't wait to hear it.
Someone unchained the dragon in the hold of my ship, Evan said, looking straight into the healer's eyes. Someone who left his wizard collar behind. Sulhan's eyes narrowed, and he shifted on his cushion. Message received.
Really? Really. The dragon escaped, flew straight to the tower, and rescued Jenna.
The healer's wary interest dissolved into skepticism.
The dragon again. That's your theory? That after spending weeks confined below decks, this Carthian dragon's first instinct was to fly across town and smash a hole in a castle to rescue a girl he'd never met?
Sulhan shook his head.
How long did it take you to come up with that?
I think Jenna is a shapeshifter, or at least someone with a special affinity for dragons.
Convince me, the healer said, looking obstinate as a rock. When Jenna's in danger, have you noticed that she develops scales?
The healer, frowning, stared at him, then nodded.
I did see something like that, he said, when I was treating Jenna in Arden's court, and her wound was healing up. There was, at first, something that looked like scales. I didn't know what to make of it. Exactly. I couldn't imagine how anyone would have survived that fire in the tower. But she did. I think that she is resistant to flame.
Something you hadn't counted on, the healer said.
You're wrong. Nobody is happier than I am that Jenna survived and escaped, Evan said.
Looking into the healer's face, he thought, well, maybe somebody is. He pressed on, building his case.
Did you notice her eyes?
What about them? From the healer's expression, it seemed he didn't like Evan noticing anything about Jenna.
Beautiful, golden, almost reptilian, wouldn't you say?
I suppose, Sulhan said grudgingly, though I never really thought of them that way.
Something smashes a hole in the tower. Jenna and the Sun Dragon disappear. The next thing we know, Jenna is in the mountains, ordering an extra-large harness from the upland trader. A harness for a dragon, perhaps?
The healer grunted, still uncommitted, but wavering, as if weighing the evidence.
Finally, the dragon was with Jenna when I saw her on the coast. It was wearing a harness. After incinerating my ship, she mounted up and they flew off together. Jenna was riding on the dragon.
Evan nodded.
Exactly. Legend has it that the ancient Nazari rulers fielded squadrons of dragon fighters. There are images of them in the ancient texts.
The healer scrubbed his hands through his hair.
All right. Leaving the topic of dragons for the moment, let's say you'd succeeded, and your deal had gone forward. What did you plan to do with Jenna after the trade was made?
Evan looked down at his hands and considered what to say.
Being the target of someone like Celestine is a lonely business, he said finally. There is nobody I can really trust, and no source of information that I can access without risking my life. I hoped that Jenna was ahead of me, that she knew more about this magic than I do. I hoped that we could share information and find a way to fight back. Did you tell her that?
Evan nodded.
Eventually, but not until we met again, on the coast, near Chalk Cliffs. I couldn't risk telling her while we were in Arden's court. How did she respond?
Evan laughed.
Not well. I'm the last person she wants for a partner. The way she sees it, I ruined her life.
I don't think it's a matter of perspective, the healer said. You did ruin her life.
Her life would have been ruined with or without my involvement. You may not believe me, but I was trying to help. I told her the truth about the mage mark, all of it. I tried to persuade Jenna that we are natural allies, that we share the same blood.
What do you mean you share the same blood? Suhan said, leaping on that like a trout on a fly.
Celestine claims that the mage marked are related to her, that we have Nazari blood, which is why we belong together. Remember, it was Jenna who drew Celestine to the wetlands.
Jenna and the busker, Suhan said, half to himself.
Evan's mind was racing along, and now it skidded to a stop.
Busker, what do you mean?
The healer sighed.
Back at solstice, when I was still in Arden, a street performer, a musician, led my sister into an ambush.
Oh, Evan said, unsure where this was going.
Did it... was she...
She was unhurt, but one of her personal guards was killed. The Queen's guard tracked the busker down in Chalk Cliffs, and he turned out to have a mage mark too.
Evan was stunned. He'd been living alone with this secret for most of his life, but now the mage marked seemed to be surfacing at every turn, flushed out of hiding by Celestine.
Did you ask him about the mark?
Evan leaned forward.
What did he tell you?
The healer shook his head. He claimed he didn't know much about it either. He'd been working with a gang out of Baston Bay when he was recruited to do a street concert, supposedly to try to woo my sister on behalf of a suitor.
So, this person used his gift to try to murder the heir to the throne.
Evan felt as if he were standing on a sandbar that was being washed out from under him. Suhan nodded.
Now, bear in mind, most of this is second-hand, because I just arrived home after a long time away.
In Arden's court.
In the south, yes.
So, the busker, what is his name?
Brion de Tarvos, he calls himself.
The healer was watching Evan closely. Evan made no attempt to hide his surprise.
Tarvos? But that's where...
That's where your stronghold is, Suhan said, nodding.
Evan was beginning to see why the wetlanders might be wary of him. How could he possibly win their trust with that history on the books?
The busker has the gift of ensnarement? Enticement?
Something like that. My sister... She wouldn't...
Anyway...
The healer fumbled his way to the end of that sentence, as if changing his mind several times on the way.
So, you can see why we're trying to jam all these pieces into the same puzzle. One theory is that Arden's behind it, because we've been enemies for so long. That assumes that Karthus is here as a proxy for the Montanes, hired as mercenaries to fight their battle for them, since the Thanes are in rebellion.
Celestine is nobody's proxy, Evan said. If the young king thinks she's biddable, he will learn to his sorrow that she is not.
The healer nodded.
I agree. Given what happened in Arden's court, and the fact that the busker was in Chalk Cliffs when it came under attack, I'm inclined to think that the Empress came north on her own, and she was after the busker.
Evan didn't want to ask, but he had to know.
You mentioned that the busker was in Chalk Cliffs. Where is he now?
We don't know, Suhan said. He was in the city when it fell. We believe that he might be among the prisoners the Empress took back to her capital.
Again, it seemed like he had more to say, but didn't.
Evan tried not to surrender to despair. Despite everything he'd done, all the plans he'd laid with Destin, another of the Magemarked was in the Empress's hands.